Good morning, church. Do you ever listen to a news bulletin on the radio and hear an item and you think to yourself, why on earth is that news? Why does that warrant going on a national or international news bulletin? I mean, this morning it was the ingredients of Princess Eugenie's wedding cake. And one of the regular features which come up on news bulletins, which I can personally never see the point of, are the annual awards of the movie industry. And for a start, there seem to be so many of them. We have Oscars and Grammys and Emmy Awards. There are BAFTAs, there are Golden Globes, and believe it or not, there are even Tony Awards. And a lot of these movie awards are given out for good acting. And this is the strange thing. In the end, what they are doing is they are rewarding someone for pretending to be someone they are not. And the better you are at pretending, the more likely you'll get the award. But today's section of the Sermon on the Mount, which is where we're at in our Sunday mornings at the moment, Matthew chapter 6, Jesus highlights another category of actors. Because there is another kind of pretending to be someone that you're not, that Jesus says actually has very few rewards. Even though it's done to try and win people's favour. And Jesus calls these type of actors hypocrites. And that's why Jesus starts this section with a warning. Do you see the first two words of this chapter? Be careful. Be careful. Because if your motive in doing good things, like praying or giving, is so that people will think highly of you, then according to Jesus, God is not impressed. You see, the Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' teaching on what it means to be a real, authentic disciple. And perhaps the most crucial thing that Jesus has said so far is in verse 20 of chapter 5, which is the section we looked at last week, where he said, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, that must have blown the minds of those listening to him, because the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were, in the eyes of the general population, the most righteous people you could possibly dream about. They did everything according to the law. But the point that Jesus was making is that it's not enough to keep the letter of the law if you're not keeping the spirit of it. It's not enough to observe the commandments outwardly if you are not doing so inwardly. And in the first part of chapter 6, there are three areas of practical righteousness, or of authentic discipleship, if you like. Three areas which Jesus highlights. Verses 2 to 4 deal with money. Verses 5 and 6 deal with prayer. And verses 16 to 18 deal with fasting, doing without. Because here is the nub of the issue. What do you do in order to be a follower or a worshipper of God? Now, if you had asked any ordinary Jew at the time, what were the most important things about being a devout Jew? He would almost certainly have mentioned, amongst other things perhaps, he would have mentioned prayer, fasting, and giving. Now, what does Jesus do with this idea? Because many Christians would want to say, well, we've done away with all of that. Christian discipleship is a matter of a relationship with God. It's about serving God, knowing God, loving God. You don't need any rules or regulations. You don't have to focus on complying with certain set observances. But the interesting thing is that Jesus doesn't have a word to say against any of these practices of the Pharisees. Jesus actually seems to assume that his disciples will continue to do them. In verse 2 and verse 5 and verse 16, Jesus doesn't say, if you give, if you pray, if you fast. He says, when you do these things. There seems to be an assumption that you will. But the difference between his disciples and the religious legalists is how they do these things and why. And Jesus looks at these religious observances from two points of view. He tells us about the wrong way, and then he tells us the right way. The wrong way is the way of the hypocrites. Now, for us, the word hypocrite means basically pretending to be something that you are not. It is insincerity. And the motive is almost certainly to impress people, to gain their approval, their respect, so that you think more highly of them. Let me give you an example, personal example, to demonstrate, if I may. Some years ago, I went to a reception with Billy Graham. I will say that again so that you can take in the impressiveness of my social calendar. Some years ago, I went to a reception with Billy Graham. Billy and I spent a couple of hours there together. He gave a very interesting presentation. We had our photos taken and enjoyed some rather fancy cocktail snacks and drinks. Yes, it was the real Billy Graham. He was in the UK on a special visit. But did I chat with him? Did I ask him about what influence he has with successive American presidents? Did I discuss the spiritual state of the Western world with him? No. Did I get any tips on preaching from him? No. That's probably obvious. Did I share a joke with him? No. Did I speak with him at all? No. Did he even make eye contact with him? No. Appearances can be deceptive. Yes, I did stand about 2 yards away from him in the foyer when he was departing at the end. But that was as far as I got. Yes, in one sense, I went to a reception with Billy Graham. But in another sense, I didn't. Appearances can be deceptive. And in our world today, it is only too common for politicians, for sports personalities, and even for the likes of you and me, to appear to be one thing, but in actual fact, the reality is very different. Harold Shipman, you remember, appeared to be a very dedicated, caring family doctor. The reality was something entirely different. And whilst I'm sure we wouldn't dream of putting ourselves in the same bracket as Harold Shipman, we're frequently very adept at hiding the truth from even our nearest and dearest. But where such deception is at its most dangerous is in the spiritual realm. Because whilst we might think that we are pulling the wool over others' eyes about the state of our spiritual health, yet there is no way we can pull the wool over God's eyes. He can see straight through into our hearts and tell if we're trying to deceive others or even ourselves about the state of our hearts. He knows exactly where we stand with him. And such deception is most dangerous when it comes to spiritual matters, because the fruits of our deception can have eternal consequences. You see, the Greek word for hypocrite has a lot wider meaning than simply a person who tries to hoodwink others into thinking that they're someone they're not. Jesus is speaking of people who are actually sincerely deluding themselves as well. They're not just deceiving other people, they're deceiving themselves as to the nature of true religion. They are putting all their efforts into what they think they ought to be doing. And it's wrong. The fundamental thing that is wrong is that the Pharisees and the teachers of the law concentrated only on outward appearance. If you look at verse 2, they sound a trumpet when they are going to give money. This was, in fact, a regular thing, which we hear about from other sources as well. And no doubt they would say it was necessary so that the poor would know where and when to turn up for a handout. But clearly the Pharisees themselves rather enjoyed the moment when everyone would come round the corner and there they were ready to hand out the small change. And it's not that much different today when you think about it. Celebrities and large companies love to make donations to charities when they know that the TV cameras and the media are around. How do they give? Well, with things like big dummy checks with their name in big letters beside the amount. Hypocrites love to give when they know that something will be named after them, or there will be a plaque inscribed to acknowledge their generosity. Telethons always get more money when they read out the names of the people who have given. People like the world to know that they have given. Dare I say it? There can even be hypocrites in the church. And one of the things I find so distasteful is the kind of situation where a congregation decide they want to put up a new church building. And they then spend ages trying to pay it off, until somebody suggests that if each family in the church were to donate the cost of one of the pews, then they could have a brass plaque with their name on it put on the end of the pew. And within a week, all the pews have been paid for. Have you come across that kind of thing? I have. What about prayer? That's the second example Jesus flags up. When you get to verse 5, you discover that the Pharisees love to pray at street corners. This probably means that they prayed in public at the fixed times of prayer, when everyone was expected to stop what they were doing and to pray for a few minutes. Midday strikes. Drop your work for a moment. Be impressed. That's what the Pharisees did. At the certain times of the day, they made sure they were on display in saying their prayers. And it might just happen that they set off to go shopping at 12:05. And lo and behold, when 12 o'clock strikes, it just happens to be going into St. David's Centre or to the Queen's Arcade. And then, well, we can't set a bad example now, can we? Now, I don't think Jesus is saying that you shouldn't pray in the presence of other people. I don't think he's saying you can't pray together in church. Because if you look at what he goes on to say next, you clearly can. He says, we pray our Father. Not just my Father. Praying together is important. But he is saying, don't pray to impress people. Don't pray to the audience. Pray to God. Because there is a trap that some Christians do fall into. I love extempore prayer, and I think that Christians should ideally learn to be able to participate in it. But it's one drawback in public worship is that it is always open to the danger of exhibitionism. I had a lady with this problem in a previous church a long time ago, and it became impossible to have a time of open prayer if she was there, because she would not give anyone else a chance. I can't say dogmatically what her motive was, but it is possible, almost without realizing it, for some people to get a real kick out of drawing attention to themselves by doing something spiritual. And mixed motives when praying in the presence of others can be a real hindrance. The essence of prayer, you see, is to seek God's glory, not your own. And that's why, when I was an army chaplain a long time ago, I did not think it was good advice to tell a young Christian man who'd just been called up that he needed to take a stand for his faith publicly on his first night in the army by kneeling down at his bed in the barrack room and saying his prayers. Quite apart from the risk of him being injured by boots being thrown at him, I don't think that is how the Lord expected us to shine in public. Frankly, if a man is a Christian, the others in the barrack room will find out soon enough, just by his life and his witness. I think Jesus sums up what he's getting at later in Matthew chapter 23. He says there that the Pharisees do all these things to be seen by people. They make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long, which is more or less, in our day's terms, going round with a huge big black Bible sticking out of your pocket where everyone can see it, and maybe a cross or a crucifix or something prominently round your neck. Because the Pharisees loved the place of honour at feasts, the best seats in church where everyone can see them, and special greetings in the marketplace. And over it all stands Jesus' words here in verse 1. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men, to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. You see, at the heart of Pharisaic righteousness is pride. Pride that is greedy for the recognition and for the applause of other people. The Pharisees were quite right to pray. They were quite right to fast. They were quite right to give their money to the needy. But because the inner motive was wrong, all they concentrated on was the outward appearance. And so it made the whole thing a mockery. They craved the approval of other people. So how can we avoid such a terrible mistake? How can we be sure that we do it purely for God's approval? Well, it's actually quite simple. Do your acts of righteousness in secret. Secrets aren't always a good idea. And sometimes they keep family sins hidden, or they keep families together, not out of love, but out of fear. But in the case of righteousness, secrets are a good idea. as someone else put it, secrecy safeguards sincerity. Secrecy safeguards sincerity. So when you give, give secretly. When you pray, Jesus says, go into your room and shut the door. And when you fast, fast invisibly. Don't let anyone know what's going on. Now, some people might say, well, isn't this a direct contradiction of what Jesus has just said in the previous chapter about letting your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven? Well, the fundamental difference to notice is the motive involved. The hypocrites do all these things to be seen by other people, to show off, to impress. Whereas if you are living a life through which God shines, people will see it, but it's God who will be glorified, and you won't necessarily be. There's a very subtle difference, you see, here between the openness of allowing our witness to shine out and the secrecy of making sure that it's a matter between us and God. Secret righteousness demonstrates that our motives are pure, that we're doing this good thing for God to see and God alone. Because motives matter to God. He not only wants us to do the right thing, he wants us to do it for the right reason. And what Jesus is saying here in the Sermon on the Mount is, don't squander your righteous acts on a quick return. Don't blow all your hard work for a very short-term gain. If you invest in other people's praise, it lasts only for a second or two. It's a bit like a quick fix for a junkie. If you invest in God's praise, it will last for eternity. And this is a theme that runs right throughout the Sermon on the Mount. Invest in heaven. Store up treasure for eternity, where moth and rust cannot destroy. Because there are rewards in heaven. Did you notice that in this passage? Jesus refers to them here not once, but four times. In verse 1, in verse 4, in verse 6, and then further on in verse 18. Now, we don't serve Jesus for the rewards. Being a Christian is not like having a Celestia or Tesco club card. I used to think that the reward was maybe a bigger room in heaven, or being closer up to the front when we eventually stand in the presence of God. But note, if you will, how Jesus puts it in Matthew chapter 25 and verse 21 when he's commending the good and faithful servant. He says to him, come and share your master's happiness. Come and share your master's happiness. You see, pleasing God is its own reward. It is a very relational thing. Come and share your master's happiness. It may be more than that, but it can't be better than that. It's about pleasing God and sharing his happiness. Now, very briefly, verses 7 and 8. There's a second thing that Jesus tells us not to do when we pray. He says, don't keep babbling on like pagans. Some versions say, don't use meaningless repetition. Hypocrisy is not the only thing to avoid in prayer. Mouthing words without brain engaged is just as bad. You see, hypocrisy is a misuse of the purpose of prayer, diverting it from the glory of God to the glory of self. But meaningless repetition is a misuse of the nature of prayer, degrading it from being a personal approach to being a mere reciting of words. It's not that repetition is wrong. Jesus repeated himself in prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane. What is wrong is the meaningless verbosity of praying without thinking, using your mouth when your mind is not engaged. And I think it's true to say that even if some of us are not guilty on the first count of hypocrisy, there've probably been times when we would fail on this count. I think of the times when I was a schoolboy and we all had to recite the Lord's Prayer at school assemblies. And in many churches, the Lord's Prayer is recited every week. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that there is anything wrong with that, necessarily. But the danger is that when we just repeat the Lord's Prayer parrot fashion, again and again, without thinking. This is what Jesus is speaking about. This is one of the dangers of liturgical worship. Now, I come from a church background where liturgical worship was the mainstay. But the thing is, our minds can very easily switch off so that our worship becomes purely mechanical. I'm not against liturgy or prayer or responsive types of prayer. It can often be very helpful. But we need to say those prayers whilst thinking what we are saying. And ironically, at this point in the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus is about to introduce us to a pattern in prayer which we have called the Lord's Prayer, we have done with it precisely what Jesus told us not to do. You see, the Lord's Prayer was not meant to be a rote. It was meant to be a model. And next week, John's going to take us through that prayer in more detail and how we should understand it. I must close. The main question which comes to us out of this morning's study is this. What are your priorities? What's your orientation? Is it geared towards receiving glory from people or from God? Is it a recital or a relationship? Because this is the basis of Christian discipleship. And so many Christians go around playing at discipleship, doing things so that others will notice. And the truth is that what you are in secret is what you really are. And if you're wanting to measure in some way the depth of your spirituality, then measure it by what you do in secret, not by what you do publicly. That'll give you the most accurate assessment. God wants us to grow in holiness, but the extent to which we do will depend, as John Stott once put it, on which audience we choose, a human one or a divine one. Let's bow our heads and pray.